My name is Jonathan Blackwood. Welcome to my Tech Decisions Podcast. Today's guest is Tim Conkle, the president and CEO of Roland Technology Group, the principal for Citricom, and the CEO of the 20 MSP. Tim and I had a great conversation about all kinds of things, including what customers should look for and look out for when hiring an MSP.
Think about this for a minute. From a client-facing side, think about break fix. You literally call a guy and you say, hey, I want you to come fix a problem and I will pay you for every hour that you're here. So psychologically, you're really saying, hey, if you'll take your time, if you'll go slow, if you'll be sloppy, I don't even care if you know what you're doing, but if you get it fixed in the end, I'll pay you for that. How crazy is that?
And we dug into the unique system that he has set up for the 20 MSP.
Any IT company that qualifies to get into the 20, we make them great almost immediately. Now, they have to go through the process of integrating in, but once they're integrated in, they become a great MSP, a mature MSP, with everything at their fingertips that 100, 200, 300 MSP would have.
First, though, let's explain what an MSP does. For companies that don't have the inclination, for whatever reason, to have their own internal IT department, because there's so many needs that go into IT nowadays, they can outsource their IT work. And they're going to outsource them to IT companies, VARs and MSPs. A VAR works on a break-fix model. What that essentially means is they provide you with the technology, and when that technology breaks down, they fix it. And then they bill you for those hours that they're fixing the technology. An MSP is going to offer you services and you're going to pay on a monthly basis or an annual basis or whatever basis, I suppose, you and the MSP decide on. It's an ongoing thing, and the idea being that they provide support the same way that an IT department would provide support. Now, I'll let Tim explain a little bit further, but within the MSP world, there is still the potential for a break-fix model. There are MSPs that will tell you that it's a flat rate, but will find ways to build in billable hours depending on what happens, which isn't ideal, right? You may say to yourself, well, I don't want to work on the break fix model because then the IT company only gets money when something breaks. So there's almost an incentive for things to break. And this industry, the IT installer industry, for lack of a better term, they're aware of this, and for the most part, a lot of companies are moving to the managed service model. So you say, I'll pay a flat rate and things won't break down. There'll be maintenance or there'll be accountability. And I don't have to pay anything extra when things break because I'm already paying the flat rate anyway. It's almost like insurance for your IT. But what you don't want is to have to pay that premium when break time comes around. You shouldn't need to do that. And that's sort of the point that Tim is trying to make, and that's what he's trying to do with the 20 MSP. The 20 is a system of MSPs that work together and use each other's resources in order for small or relatively small MSPs to have the same reach that a large MSP would have. Tim's insight into why he created the 20 MSP and what it is and how it's different than really anything that's been done before is an interesting listen. But he's also someone that's been in this industry for many, many years. He gives a ton of advice on how clients should interact with MSPs, what MSPs should bring to the table, and really what customers should look out for when they're dealing with MSPs and choosing one for themselves. So listen close, because there's a lot of great information that any business owner or people in education, anyone that could potentially hire an MSP, will want to know. I'll let Tim give his insight. Enjoy.
Today's guest is Tim Conkle, President and CEO of Roland Technology Group, Principal for Citricom, and CEO of The 20 MSP. Tim, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Tim, why don't we start? How did you get involved in the MSP business or potentially the VAR business when you first started out? Tell us a little bit about your career getting to this point.
All right. So in the beginning, the military, I had never touched a computer before when I went in the military, and I was actually in the infantry, which was weird because you typically touch guns, not computers. But I got pushed into a division, a job that put me behind a computer where I kind of fell in love with technology. That's really where that part of it birthed. When I got out of the military, I worked for EDS, which was Ross Perot's company, for about 5 years. I was a Unix administrator, wrote all the access systems for access control in a system. But during that, I got to a point where I pretty much knew that being there was not going to reach some goals I'd set. And so I bought a company called Roland Technology in 1992, which was just a break-fix company. Over probably the next 20 years, I just floundered along because really if you look for a real solution for growing an MSP, becoming a really profitable, mature MSP, there wasn't anybody out there with a recipe or anything. So it took me about 20 years to really figure it out. And then flip forward 5-6 years after that. So over the first 20, I grew by nothing. I had 4 employees after 20 years. And 6 years later, after that 26 years into that Roland Technology career, or owning the company, that last 6, I went from 4 employees to over 70. And so I definitely figured out how to get from point A to point B. In figuring that out, I figured out that lots of MSPs were in the same position I was. And reality is, from a client-facing side, MSPs are not a good business decision. Now, I know everybody's going to say, I can't believe he just said that. And I'm talking about 99% of their present way of doing business is not a good business decision. And hopefully we'll touch on that a little bit during this. But in that 6 years, what I really figured out was to be a really, really mature MSP, you have to be great for the client. And so in doing that, I thought, you know what? I'm going to get other people involved in this. And we created the 20 Group, which is a huge collaboration of companies that all do the same things, which allow us to have footprint and all the other things that go with it. But that's kind of the chronology of all of it.
Just going back for a second, because you actually are the first MSP that I've had on the podcast. Could you explain to my audience the difference between, you mentioned that you were once break fix. Could you explain the difference between break fix and managed service model?
Absolutely. In fact, the reality is there's only 3 types of companies out there that do computer work, period. One's called a break fix. That's, hey, from a client side, hey, I've got something that's broke. I'm going to pick up the phone. I'm going to call an IT company. I'm going to get them to come fix it. I'm going to pay them by the hour. And then they're going to bill me in. I'm going to pay it and relationship is over. Then the second type of company you're going to find is one that moves to the next level, and you may be able to buy block time and things like that. And they may have some management piece to it, like monitoring, where you pay a specific price. So they start a little bit of a relationship, but the reality is if you look deep into that model, break fix is all wound throughout it. Think about this for a minute. From a client-facing side, think about break fix. You literally call a guy and you say, hey, I want you to come fix a problem, and I will pay you for every hour that you're here. So psychologically, you're really saying, hey, if you'll take your time, if you'll go slow, if you'll be sloppy, I don't even care if you know what you're doing, but if you get it fixed in the end, I'll pay you for that. How crazy is that? Break fix is broke. We know that. We've known that for a long time. And then the third type of company is really a relationship balanced company where you align goals between the client side and the MSP. In doing that, it becomes a really good business decision on both sides of the coin. If you look at break fix, the reality is, anytime you pay for IT, I don't care at what level you pay for it or how you pay for it, if you pay by the hour, it is the worst business decision in the world because you never know what it costs. It's like calling a car dealership and saying, hey, I want a XYZ car, and not asking how much it is. They deliver it, and they just start billing you, and your bill fluctuates. It goes all over the place, and you're like, well, why is it doing that? Well, it's how you bought it. You bought it with no real connection or relationship or business sense applied to the buying of it. Nobody ever do that. IT, I think, is probably, and I don't want to say probably, it's not. If you look at service, like a plumber, when the plumber comes out, you're at the mercy of a plumber. You've got to trust that plumber is honest and all the other things, not by contract, but just by virtue of, because he's going to charge me by the hour. Anytime you have a relationship that's paper-based, where all of those things are hammered out on the front side, it's a whole lot better. So I went a real long way to talk about break fix right there, but that's the reality of there. If you look, MSPs pretty much 99% have an hourly component to something you're going to buy from them. So look at the psychology of it. If there's an hourly component, what you're saying is the only way that I'll create the opportunity for you to make more money, and I'm talking about from a client perspective, is for you to create more hours, and that way you can bill me more. Well, wow, what's the incentive? And if you look at psychology, I mean, you know, if you create a way for somebody to do something and it creates what they want, companies want revenue. Yeah. So if you create a way of, hey, I'm giving you an open door to create revenue, well, all of a sudden it's better for you to be broken. Why? Because it takes more hours. Yeah. It's not to our advantage for a client to work well, because when they work well, guess what? We don't get paid. You know, so it has to, you have to align that relationship. Break fix just doesn't do it. Hopefully that answers your question without going all over the place on you.
Yeah, no, it very much it does. Actually, at one of the other forums, one of the speakers basically said, and I thought it was a good summary, was break fix is basically the provider only gets paid when something's broken. Managed services, the provider gets paid when things aren't broken. So what does the end user want, you know?
Yeah, but you have to be careful with that right there, because that is almost a misdirection or a mistruth. Because managed does not mean that you don't get paid when it's broke. Mm-hmm. If there's an hourly component to your managed agreement that you sign, right? Any hourly component, I don't care where it's at, that is a break fix component. So you have to be careful. A lot of the buzzword for a client to hear now is we're flat rate. You really better dig into it, because it is rare to find a true flat rate company out there. And so it's a buyer beware thing that, again, even if you do manage, and let's say you pay $3,000 a month and it's for them to upkeep you and all the other things, well, what are the things that happen in there? It's not just about making you work well. It's when equipment has changed. It's when, hey, we're going to a new piece of software, we need a new server and all these things. If there's a project base that has an hourly component to it, guess what? You've put them back in the exact same position. How do they make more money? Well, they create more projects. You know, so you have to be real careful, because the buzzword out there is flat rate and all those things. But the reality is, if you do not know, And this is a great thing for a client to understand about IT. If you do not know definitively on a monthly basis what you pay for IT, it is a bad deal. And that is the way it is. If I was a client asking an IT company that walked in, am I going to definitively know every month what you cost me? And can I budget based on the number you're going to give me? If they can't say yes to that, it's a bad deal. I'm telling you, it's like it goes back to that, you know, buying and not knowing what it cost and calling it a good business decision. It's not.
Sure. So it looks like essentially what you're asking clients to look for is a contract that is essentially a flat rate that they know what they're getting every month. And I assume Roland Technology Group and the MSPs that are a part of the 20, this is something that they're working on providing?
It's all we provide. We provide a good business decision on both sides of the coin. If you cannot align the goals, in other words, think about a client. A client really wants one thing when they're talking about IT. They want to run really, really smooth. Now flip over to the MSP side. If that goal is not the same based on a flat amount of money, there's a problem. Because now the goal, again, if the only way I make more money out of you is to break things or have things that come outside the scope, a lot of companies call it outside of scope. They have a scope in their contract, and if it's out of scope, then you have to pay us extra for that. Well, typical IT departments don't do that. That's why companies like having internal IT, because it's very predictable to a certain degree, right? And we have mirrored that. But in the 20, every IT company in the 20 mirrors that thought process of, we want to align our goal to the client's goal. And the better we make their network work, the more profitable we are. The worse it works, or if it's broke and all the other things that go with it, then the less profitable we are. So it cost us for downtime, just like it cost a client downtime. So
sure.
We share in the heartache, which means it's to our advantage to if it does. Now, you're never going to have a network that never, ever, ever breaks over the life of it. But the key is having qualified people that can quickly get it back up based on a common goal.
So when you first had the idea for the 20 and you began creating it, what was that? You know, what was the chronology of that? You had the idea, and then you had to find other companies to be a part of it, and then you had to unify all your goals. Could you go into sort of the early stages?
Sure. So what we really wanted was, if you look at IT companies, most of them are comprised of small but good companies geographically dispersed over the U.S. And then you've got companies on the other side of that coin, client side, that have multiple offices in multiple locations. How do you facilitate that where you have a good process and a good service delivery across the platform and be able to walk into a client in Dallas and say, yes, we have an office in New York, or we have an office in Boston, and it not be just a site that you've bought where you have a manager, but there's ownership at every location? That's really where the thought process came from. It was not only on the MSP side, it was together we grow stronger. On the client side, together we produce a better product, a more standardized product. And so really, that was the birth of it. The birth was really not on the client side. It was more on the MSP side of how can we help an MSP grow, and in growing, compete? How can we also create things that typical MSPs do not have? Example, you know, on the client side, most clients don't know if their IT company has a help desk, that it probably only works during the hours that they're open. After hours is called on call or something like that. How do we facilitate that as a big group where we have a help desk, not only all US-based on the help desk and the NOC side, but that is 365 days a year, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Now all of us have that, where individually, as small individual companies, even if you get up to 30, 40 employees, you typically do not have an around-the-clock help desk unless you outsource it to another help desk type thing, right? Which is typically going to have a India-based component or something like that. Think about this for a minute. If that's the fact, then is HIPAA are they really HIPAA compliant? Are they really PCI compliant? If every night you have a people in another country outside the U.S. that logs in with administrative rights to do patch management and other things, see, it becomes a dichotomy to a lot of companies, because all of a sudden they're saying they're this, but really, if you roll the covers back, it's a pretty iffy thing. So really, it was about bringing all those things and bringing the where we can compete with large companies like your Mindshifts and All Covers and all that stuff, right? We're same delivery, but all U.S. based. Can it be standardized? Now, on client side, what does that mean for a client side? What means you get all U.S. based help? It also means you get a standard that is not only dictated by a single company and expertise of a single company, but now you have 800,000-900,000 employees across a variety of companies that all geared towards a common goal, and that is having the best processes, service, and all the other things that go with it based on our model. Our model says the better we are, the more profitable we are. If we're not great, it's hard to be profitable. So if you look at the 20, they have to become a mature company. Mature means service delivery and all the other things that go with it. So that was, again, a really long way of answering probably a short question.
No problem. It's interesting to hear because it's such a unique business model. And that's really what I want to ask you about next is companies join the 20. How have you guys figured out a structure to share resources and potentially to share revenue as well?
So if you look at the 20, it's a consumption-based thing. We bring everything to the table that an MSP needs to be mature. So I do not take revenue from an MSP in the sense of, hey, I want a percentage of your revenue. It's all consumption. It's all about what they consume. It's about what they need at the time of need. Example, let's say that an MSP doesn't have a VMware certified engineer and they reach into the group and get it. They only consume that amount of time. But what does that bring to the table to the client side? Because that's really, your podcast is more for the client side. So what does that ultimately do for the client side? What it does is it takes a small IT company that they may have partnered with, and it gives them all the resources they need, not only at the moment of need, it does it to where you do not, they don't have to hire. So in other words, they're going to have it at their fingertips, which means we're not going to pull all the revenue out from a labor point, but only when they need it, which is great for the side because now they're more competitive. They're more up to date with all the things they have, you know. Most IT companies have really good engineers in them. The problem is they're not large enough to have vast knowledge, VMware certified, Exchange certified people, 365 certified people, VoIP certified people, all the pieces. But as a group, we're super strong. We literally have where a company may sign with one of our MSPs and they need help onboarding them. Maybe it's a large multi-location deal. They'll literally reach into the group, pull from the group, and incrementally use each other. Now, the joy of that is it's all consumption-based. So if you're a company that has 100 clients, obviously you're going to consume more, right? But you're able to because your revenue side of that is there. If you're a smaller company, you consume less. So we fit and we make any IT company that qualifies to get into the 20, we make them great almost immediately. Now, they have to go through the process of integrating in, but once they're integrated in, they become a great MSP, a mature MSP, with everything at their fingertips that 100, 200, 300 employee MSP would have, but not at the cost. So they're able to deliver on the other side back to the client a very predictable cost structure because of this, which is great for the client.
Yeah, and that's what makes this so unique. And from a client side, really, something like this isn't done on the commercial integration side or even on the security installation side, from what I know. So the client might ask, you know, if you guys are providing the same capabilities as a large company, as a large MSP might, or a global MSP, or a national or a multinational MSP.
Right.
Why don't I want to just go with that MSP that's one unified company versus going with the 20, which is multiple companies sort of sharing resources?
Think about this. They're not predictable. They're not a good business decision, ultimately, at the end of the day. They're super expensive. The other thing is this. They're all management ran. So in other words, if you're in Boston, service delivery is going to be different than it is in Dallas. Why? Because it's not all unified in the sense that you look at even companies that have grown very fast in the MSP space by buying other companies. By region, they do things completely different. They don't standardize. They don't have all the pieces in play. I think probably the greatest measure is the model. Think about this. Who cares more about whether you're happy, an owner or a manager? At the end of the day, it's the owner, because it ultimately hits him harder than it hits anybody. If he loses a client, he takes a pay cut. A manager doesn't take a pay cut. So at every location in our group, there is an owner who makes owner decisions and all the other things. You're never dealing with someone that can't make a decision. I'll never forget, Robin Robbins had a guy, Jim Crystal, and he talked about the terrorist and why they're so tough to beat. It's because decisions are literally pushed down to the base level. A guy in the field can make a decision based on what he sees, right? And so if you look at the 20, it was crazy because you have the same thing. You have a decision that's pushed down all the way to that local office that can be made on the spot. So if and that could be a variety of things, right? Hey, this location needs somebody this Saturday. Well, a manager might say, well, we don't have anybody available. I promise you, an owner doesn't say that. And so it is a complete switch. If you look at the 20, there is nothing that exists like this in this space. Why? Because it's not easy, and you have to have really good MSPs to standardize. It can't be about egos and all the other things that go with it. It's all about, which again brings about a really good client-facing side thing. You know, if you look at your enterprise-level companies, most likely they're knocking things. They've already shipped that overseas. So it falls back into that same thing. The uniqueness of what we do is everything is U.S.-based. Nothing is contracted out past that. Everything is ownership-run, not contracted. So it's a really cool model. The client side, whole lot more client satisfaction, client retention, all the other things that go with it. Any client out there looking for managed service or somebody to manage their IT infrastructure that doesn't look at a 20-based MSP or a company that adheres to the 20 standard is really doing a disservice to themselves.
Sounds like it. And for clients that are interested in finding a 20-based, I have a sort of a two-part question. How do they find them? How do they find out which MSPs are a part of the 20? And B, when MSPs are looking to join the 20, what's the vetting process like? What qualifications do they need? How do they sort of get inducted?
So, first question first, how would you find a 20 partner? If you're a client, just literally the20.com, T-H-E-2-O.com. The 20 is based on the 80-20 rule. A lot of people think, oh, you got 20 companies. No, it is literally based on the 80-20 rule, which segues into your second question. We are literally looking for companies that have a profile of a top 20 company. Now, what does that mean? Ownership. Who are they? What are their goals? What do they think client-facing things ought to look like? You know, what are they in this for, ultimately? I find money to be a byproduct of a great product, right? If you're a great product, if you're an owner that understands that your product is the most important thing you have, money is secondary to it because money comes with great products. So if you can deliver a great service product, the money becomes secondary. It is the thing that says, hey, great job, right? It shouldn't be the other way around. I want the money, whether I do a great job or not. It should be the predicator. And so when we're looking at companies, we're looking at like-minded companies like that. There is a vetting process to get into the 20. You can't just call and say, hey, I want to be in the 20. You can't just call and say, hey, I want to use the 20's help desk. It is not a third-party help desk. It is a help desk created by a group of MSPs to facilitate 100% U.S.-based delivery. That's really what it is. So when we talk about the help desk, it's not, yeah, we outsource. None of us outsource. We all use a common help desk that was built by us, you know. So I think the biggest thing is mentality of a company. Most companies are technically sound because they were started by an engineer. What they lack is the business acumen. We really want to know, hey, from a business standpoint, are you willing to transform and really become a great company? That's really what we're looking for. Now, that being said, they have to have pieces to that, right? I mean, they have to have, I mean, it's crazy, but a lot of it is one-on-one conversation. I want to know about their company. I want to know what their goal is. If their initial goal is, man, I want to make a lot of money, I'm not interested in them. I'm just not. If their initial goal is, hey, I want to sell my company so it's a better delivery for a client on the other side, it's a better product and all the other things that go with it, I want to be able to compete. What does compete mean? It means, hey, I want to be a better company. But if it's about money, if it's literally about money, I'm not interested, you know. So pretty cool deal.
Yeah, I think so. Just a last question. What is the future of the 20? You know, 5, 10 years from now, where do you guys hope to be?
So literally, the 20 will cover every square inch of the U.S. and Canada. So I'm in talks right now with companies that are in Europe and other places. I really want to be able at some point to have a congruent service delivery model that covers every square inch of the modern world. Now, what will that mean for companies? That would mean if I was a company in the UK and I had offices in the US, I could get same level of service and service delivery from one single thing. Now, obviously, to make it congruent, you want your European companies to have a European-based help desk, and they would use that, U.S.-based. But it's one of those things. There's nothing that exists that can touch every square inch of the U.S. in our space. There's just not, you know. So literally, you've got other companies that are created around this that do fractional IT. So example, if I'm in Dallas and I don't really have an office in New York, I can call one of these companies and they'll send a technician out. And I can direct that technician. Well, it's pretty dangerous. There's no real tie to that technician outside of, hey, I outsourced a guy to come show up at your office. I don't know anything about that guy. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So literally, it is to be a national footprint. Initially, the 20 itself, what I'm connected to, will be U.S. and Canada. If it goes into other places, Europe and things like that, will be something that will be licensed out. The model will be licensed out with the same thought process in mind.
Personally, I can't wait to see how you guys continue to grow over the next several years. And I know that my audience will be interested to see that as well. I know you mentioned it before, but one more time, how can they get in touch with you or get in touch with MSPs that are a part of the 20?
Simply go to the20.com. It's the20.com. There, whether you're an MSP or someone looking for a local IT provider that adheres to this standard and can bring this service delivery, they can find both sides of that coin there.
All right, fantastic. Tim Conkle, CEO of the 20 MSP, as well as president and CEO of Roland Technology Group and principal for Citricom. Thank you so much for joining us here today, and also thank you for your service as well.
Hey, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day and all the people that listen to this. Hey, if I've educated somebody on a better way to find a great IT company, it makes it all worth it, man. Hey, I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thank you very much.
Thank you for tuning in to My Tech Decisions podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Blackwood. You can find me at Blackwood Tweets. And if you want to find out more about Tech Decisions, head on over to techdecisions.co or follow us at My Tech Decisions. We'll see you next time.